Welcome, Open Drama UK Company. This is your half-hour call. We are proud to present another monthly podcast of high-quality CPD conversations, features, Q&A and discussions related to drama and theatre education produced by people in the know. Put your headphones on, grab a cuppa and get ready.
Hello and welcome to Half Hour Call, the Open Drama UK's podcast. And I'm very privileged this afternoon to be joined by Jackie O'Hanlon, who is the Director of Learning and National Partnerships for the Royal Shakespeare Company. Can I just check, are you based in Stratford?
I'm not. I actually live in Birmingham, but some of the team are based in Stratford, but we work all across the country. So we have members of staff who are based in different parts of the country. It isn't necessarily that everybody has to live in Stratford, no.
You are somebody who is very, very embedded at the heart of kind of one of the iconic institutions to do with theatre in this country. But what started you off? What was the thing that made you think, you know, there's something remarkable about this drama theatre world?
What started me off was an amazing English teacher joining my secondary school. She's called Mary Higgins. And in the equivalent of about year eight, she joined my school. And before that, I hadn't engaged in any kind of theatre. I was in a very working class family. My parents worked, you know, shift work at a factory. It just wasn't part of our life to engage in going to the theatre. And what Miss Higgins did was she began to introduce school plays and she began to introduce drama in the classroom. And that was an absolute revelation to me. And I discovered new ways of learning. That's what the drama pedagogies can give us, can't they? They're all based on, you know, we're talking and we're doing and we're active. And so it was like a light bulb. I still remember the first class that she taught us. It was so many years ago, but it gave me an entry into learning that I didn't have. And it then started the trajectory of the life that I have, let alone the career that I have now. So I'm infinitely grateful that she came to my school.
And was she the first person who introduced you to Shakespeare?
Yes, she was. So she was English teacher. We didn't have a drama teacher. We didn't have a drama department, but Mary was a brilliant drama teacher within English. And I also remember my first lesson on Shakespeare, where we were sitting down in that lesson and we were reading it around the classroom. But I remember loving the experience of being able to read it out loud. And so it feels extraordinary to me that the job I have is about creating more opportunities for young people to have the experiences that I was lucky enough to have at that school. It worries me that 30 years on, the experience that I had at school, it isn't what everybody gets. And if that teacher hadn't come to my school, I would not have this life. And that's what worries lots of us in theatre and drama, isn't it? That we know this work unlocks potential in young people. We believe, you know, I saw that I could do different things and my teachers saw that I could do different things. And if, you know, Mary Higgins hadn't introduced drama in the classroom, I wouldn't know that and they wouldn't know that.
I think that's one of the challenges that anybody faces in sort of drama education or theatre education, is that we're converts. We know that it works. It's trying to convince everybody else that it works and that it's of value. And the fear that we have is exactly what you're describing, is that there are places out there in the world where there are young people who have not had those opportunities, but for whom the experience would be so enriching if we could just get to them. So I suppose that leads me beautifully on to actually, let's start with that. What is the way that the RSC and your department is trying to engage with as many young people as possible?
Yeah, and I've worked in lots and lots of different theatres throughout my career. So sometimes an actor and always as an educator. It was really interesting coming to the RSC because it's a different kind of challenge, because you've got a house playwright who, you know, died 400 years ago, and that playwright's work is still the only work that every young person in England and Wales has to study between the age of 11 to 14. It's the only named compulsory author on the curriculum still. But the work is really challenging. And so that changes the decisions that you make about the priorities, the strategic priorities you set. So for us, the absolute priority is supporting teachers and young people to use Shakespeare as a Trojan horse through which to unlock potential. But you've got some barriers along the way there, because you've got complex language. You've got sometimes teachers can feel very confident and passionate about Shakespeare's work. Sometimes they don't, depending on their own educational experience. And by the time young people have got to secondary school, they can have very fixed views that Shakespeare is boring, irrelevant to their lives, and why do we have to do it? So over a number of years, what we've done is build a programme that I hope really addresses those challenges. We're never going to get to a point, I think, where we'll go job done. That's why we work in theatre, I suppose, and why we work in theatre education, because it's a constant, you know, it's like a 50-year job, isn't it? But the way the programme is now, you know, you said my job title is Learning and National Partnerships, and really that defines the two different arms to the way the Learning and National Partnerships work operates. So we have a learning team, and that learning team creates work with and for any young person, teacher, school, lifelong learner, anywhere in the UK. Through summer schools, through teacher professional learning, through workshops, through conferences for teachers and young people. And then we also have another team, which is called our National Partnerships team. And that works through targeted long-term partnerships with primary and secondary schools in areas of structural disadvantage, where we know that a one-off intervention or a commitment of a term or an academic year or even three academic years isn't really going to make the difference that we need through a number of bodies coming together, agencies coming together to all support improvements in learning outcomes for children and young people. So in the National Partnerships work, we have currently 25 different partnership clusters that total about 250 schools that we're working with, you know, over 10 years or 15 years. And then in the learning team that I originally talked about, typically we're working with about 750 schools just through that programme. Through different programs of teacher professional learning, workshops, conferences, etc. But all of it developed through active dialogue with teachers and with young people. I know when I was starting out and before I worked at the RSC, there's a sense of these kinds of institutions feeling impenetrable. Mm. So I want to send out a really big message to any teachers or arts practitioners that are listening, who we really want to be in active dialogue with you. If you aren't currently working with us and you don't know what we do, or you don't like what we do and you think we should do something different, you know, please get in touch. We'd really love to be talking to you and hearing your views.
I mean, is that a problem for you that there is this kind of monolithic status of the Royal Shakespeare Company, that people find you unapproachable in that sense? Or do you, is that, am I misreading that from what you're saying?
No, I don't think you're misreading. I think once people do get to know us, then they know that we're full of, you know, people like them, but there's an absolute commitment to social justice, to making a difference to learning outcomes for children and young people, you know, that we've got a lot of shared values in the work that is happening in schools, that arts practitioners are doing, that drama practitioners are doing, and that we're doing. But what we've got with the Royal Shakespeare Company is you've got Royal in the title, you've got Shakespeare in the title, and those are barriers, because people will make assumptions if they don't know us. And some of those assumptions will be based on an experience, I hope, from longer ago, or from perceptions that we have of what a company that's called the Royal Shakespeare Company will be like. So we are constantly trying to overcome the perception barrier. Lots of our, you know, I always think that teachers believe other teachers, and schools believe other schools, don't they? So that's why the work that we, you know, we work with about 2,000 teachers a year, and, you know, all told about 1,000 schools a year. And actually, it's through those teachers and through those schools that we change perceptions. Because it's the head teacher who says to the other head teacher, oh, no, we're working with them. And actually, they're interested in how they can meet the needs of our young people. What they're not saying is, here's a ready-made programme, please do this. That, you know, because that any kind of top-down approach is so out of date. It's all about co-creative practice. And again, teachers that are working with us through our, you know, we have a certificate programme, because when we did research with teachers about what forms of professional learning do you need, they said to us, well, what we really want is sandwich courses where we can have an immersion into pedagogy, then go away, do some work ourselves in the classroom, and then come back. So that consultation that we did has transformed the kinds of professional learning opportunities that we create with and for teachers, so that they're really meeting the current needs of how teachers, the kind of journey that teachers want to be on, and the kind of community of practice that they want to connect with nationally. That's something that a company like the RSC is well equipped to do, because we're working with schools all across the country. So the professional learning opportunities that we create, you're going to find yourself in a room with practitioners from schools, of all kinds of schools, from all kinds of backgrounds, from all across the UK and internationally. And that can be quite exciting for teachers.
Can I ask you to kind of give me an example, sort of a walkthrough? I am a teacher and I am interested in working with you to improve how my Key Stage 3 students are interacting with Shakespeare. In my case, I'm not new and shiny. I've been doing it for a little while, so I feel that I need refreshing. But I've come into a new school, and whilst the school has we're not in an area of deprivation or anything like that, but I want to use Shakespeare as a learning tool, as that pedagogical thing that you can get on with. What kind of things might I be able to access if I got in touch with you and said, help?
You'll get a lot of choices. So, for example, in terms of what is freely available, we have a Shakespeare Learning Zone, which is made for 11 to 18 year olds. I mean, it can also really work for upper primary. But that Shakespeare Learning Zone has about 17 of Shakespeare's plays on it at the moment. We're ultimately aiming to put the full canon on there. And it's interactive, and it's got different levels. So it's got, you know, if you just want your students to find out about the story, if you want them to understand the language, if you want them to do scene studies, if you want to set homework, all the Learning Zone is built to be introductory or in-depth wherever you are, whether you're Key Stage 3 or Key Stage 5. So we might say to you as that teacher, have a look on the Learning Zone and get some of your young people to critique it and see whether it helps them, if whatever the play is that you want to study, see if they can engage with it critically and tell you about what they found that's really useful about it, or what they didn't like about it, and then you can tell us that. We have lots and lots of free downloadable teacher resources that are written by artists and teachers about how particularly as you're an experienced drama practitioner, you can pick up those resources and they'll give you all, I hope they'll give you some new ideas and new stimulus for teaching plays, particularly plays like Romeo and Juliet and Macbeth, where we might have taught them for 20 years or 30 years. And actually we want to be reminded about all of the very fresh and new interpretive choices that we can make. So every time we do a play, particularly those plays that that appear very regularly in the curriculum and in Key Stage 3 study, we're really interested in reminding teachers or sharing with teachers the new kinds of questions and interpretive choices that the actors are finding in their exploration of those plays. And again, linked to the Shakespeare Learning Zone, you'll see lots of video content on the Learning Zone that shows actors rehearsing those key themes from Macbeth or Romeo and Juliet and talking about their interpretive choices of the balcony scene, you know, some of those kind of iconic speeches of Romeo or the theme scenes between Romeo and Juliet or Macbeth's soliloquy before he goes in to murder Duncan. So if you then like what you see there, then you could also sign up for a live lesson. So we do live lessons online and free broadcasts on demand of the plays that we have in performance. So at the end of this month, we're in March 23 now, the 3rd of March, but towards the end of this month, we're going to share a live lesson around The Tempest, where we'll have the actors playing Prospero and Miranda and Ariel, working with the director of the production, exploring key scenes, but also linking that to the kinds of drama work that we might then do in the classroom as students to explore some of that work in the same way. And we're also going to have a live lesson on Macbeth later in the academic year, at the start of 23-24 in October. So do look out for those. You have to register, but they're all free and there's lots of rich resources around that. The live lessons are about an hour in length. They are interactive, so you can send in questions beforehand. If you've got your puzzle, if you're working with your Key Stage 3 group or your GCSE group, like for Macbeth, know that they'll be able to send in questions and get them answered by the creative team. So if you're really struggling with what does that mean, send that in to us and we'll be able to get the creative team to answer that question. If, you know, you talked about you're a teacher that's been working for a long time and you want fresh stimulus, what you might want to consider is attending a professional learning session with us. So we have different levels of professional learning. We have foundation stage, intermediate, and advanced. And all of that, each of those phases is all rooted in what we call rehearsal room pedagogy. So it's because what we're interested in doing is making the link between how actors and directors have to access these plays, share those ways of working with teachers, so that they can be saying to their students, these aren't things that are made up for young people that are exploring Shakespeare's plays. What we're doing with our class is we're exploring this play and we're learning about this play in the same way that professional actors have to. They don't sit down and read it because that's a disaster and they don't understand it if you do it that way. So I think it's really important that students know actors don't have a kind of different kind of brain or a different way of learning. They find Shakespeare's language really hard. And so we've had to find all of these brilliant ways of actively exploring the play and the interpretive choices in the play. And that's what we share with teachers that then share that way of working with students. So if a teacher was interested in that sort of professional learning and they trusted the RSC to deliver a high quality experience for them once they've tested us out, then they could also choose to do that. And another thing they could do is our artists, our practitioners will also come out and work in any school anywhere in the country working with teachers on professional learning. So if you were a drama teacher in a school, but you were connected with other drama teachers locally, we could come to your school, and on an inset day, other teachers could be invited to it, and we could then deliver an inset day that meets exactly the needs of your of the teachers that you've you know in your cluster of schools.
How do you normally make contact with people?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It's all about data, isn't it? We really need the school's data in order to be in contact with you. So if you sign up to receive information about the RSC's work, and you can specify you just want to hear about the learning opportunities, the education opportunities, we will then send you information about all of the different opportunities, including, you know, there's a really brilliant partnership that we're in at the moment with TikTok, where we've got TikTok tickets. TikTok tickets are £10. They're only available to state schools. But we also have some funded travel opportunities as well. Now, we can only share that information with you if we've got your contact details. So I really hope that more and more teachers will sign up to our newsletter so that we can be sharing. It comes through every month. Again, you know, it's sort of, we're aware, gosh, teachers get completely overwhelmed with inboxes, don't they? But we have gone to a kind of monthly update email to teachers that are on our mailing list that gives them all of that information about the live lessons, the learning zone, things like TikTok tickets, things like free travel. When we have those partnerships that enable us to offer free travel for state schools, as well as the professional learning opportunities. So that's a great way of guaranteeing you are going to get to hear about it. We do some advertising, like in TES or through Facebook or on Twitter. So if teachers also follow us on social media channels, then you will also get to hear about those things.
So let's be open about this. The RSC doesn't just do Shakespeare. I mean, they do explore other things. I mean, one of the interesting things that I've been looking at on the programme for this year is The Empress, because I was involved in Lit in Colour as well. How is that supported by what you do with the learning department?
I'm so pleased you mentioned The Empress, because that's been such a key piece of work for us. So we have a youth advisory board at the RSC, which is made up of 30 young people aged 9 to 21. And they're drawn from schools all across the country. And that group have worked a lot on lobbying exam boards about extending representation in the curriculum. So we've been sharing all of the brilliant work that Lit in Colour have been doing. We were invited to do some work with the young agitators at the Royal Court, who were led by Romana Flello. And so Romana's work with the young agitators has been to be in dialogue with a variety of exam boards about extending representation in the drama curriculum and in the English literature curriculum. And so members of our youth advisory board joined a session with exam boards to talk about why that matters to young people. And they were, I mean, it was a troubling session in some way because of the responses that were given to the young people. About why they weren't seeing the representation that they felt they should and wanted to see in, for example, the drama curriculum. One of the responses was, well, we can't find suitable texts pre-1950s. And the young people said, who is making that choice? Who is deciding who is being represented in the decision making? And, you know, what was true of that meeting was that we had a very, very strong representation of different ethnicities and abilities in the young people. But in the exam boards, we had, you know, white men. And so it was a very challenging session. But that session and the work of the Youth Advisory Board internally at the RSC is what has led to the empress, because what, and also lit in colour. So in looking at the data from lit in colour about the exceptionally low percentages of young people that are studying works of literature by writers from an ethnically diverse background and by women writers from an ethnically diverse background, and the other, you know, key finding that actually we've got to have productions of these texts and very high quality resources developed around them, because it's very risky for a teacher to change the text that they have been studying for such a long period of time. So it's very difficult, you know, you've got to support the teacher, we've got to all support the teachers. So that is absolutely what led to the programming of the Empress. So we are developing a large body of additional materials which will involve interviews with the writer, with the director, with the creative team. It will involve lots of practical work that students can be doing in classrooms with their teachers. It will include short form video content of key scenes so that we can create the richest possible resource bank for teachers in order to make that transfer of teaching, the choice of teaching the Empress, as safe as we possibly can and as rich as we possibly can.
Is it kind of stimulating for you to be working away from Shakespeare a little bit as well? Or is it just applying the things you've learned from working with Shakespeare to another context?
Oh, it's very interesting. I think what I find most exciting about it, I mean, I love the play The Empress, and you know, we mounted it here at the RSC a few years ago, and I loved it then. What really inspires me about it is young people's approach to it, is young people's response to it, and their passion for that text in their curricula. It's a very interesting question in terms of the RSC, because I'm very driven personally by a commitment to Shakespeare's work feeling owned by as many people as possible. And that is a really big driver for me, that we talk a lot at the RSC about, you know, in terms of what kind of RSC do we want to be by 2030. What I think our work is doing in learning is about reshaping, redefining who enjoys, learns about, shapes, and then ultimately produces and makes Shakespeare's work. You know, that starts with what are the school experiences that we have had of Shakespeare's work? Is it something that we feel included in? Is it something that we can see ourselves in? Or is it something that we feel excluded by? And there are very serious and significant issues of who is excluded currently from Shakespeare's work. But the Empress is part of how Shakespeare needs to sit in a curriculum. It also concerns me that Shakespeare, as a dead white man, is still the only named author that is on our curriculum in England and Wales. And I think we have to see Shakespeare's work set alongside the works of other writers. I absolutely believe that there is no better place to explore identity than Shakespeare's work. I believe it does confront us with issues of ableism, racism, religious intolerance, all of the things that we are seeing in our society today. And we can have a conversation across time about how those things were present in the society that Shakespeare was writing in, how they are present in our society there and there now, and therefore what our responsibilities are as teachers of Shakespeare now, as learners about Shakespeare, as producers of Shakespeare's work, whether that production is in a school hall or whether it's in a professional theatre, the same questions are asked of us in terms of representation and identity. And for me, The Empress is part of that, about how we are reframing the conversations that we have in our classrooms. We're not clear enough in the English education system, I think, about what's the purpose of the education that we're providing for our young people. What is the moral driver of that education? I feel it's very out of date. It's still industrial revolution driven, it isn't really looking at what are the skills and aptitudes that we need to be equipping our young people with. And I think that's what the Youth Advisory Board and young people agitating about representation in the curriculum, that's what they're also speaking to.
Well, you've also kind of answered what was going to be my next question, which is that whole thing about, is Shakespeare essential to the school curriculum? I mean, it's a question that we get asked a lot, and it's asked by parents, it's asked by students as well, about, well, why are we doing this? What's this got to do with me? And I think you've in many ways, you've just answered that in a very passionate response to something that wasn't Shakespeare based, which is fabulous.
You know, the answer, I feel as though at the RSA, we've been asking why Shakespeare for a number of years, because what we can't do is rest on our laurels or think, oh, well, Shakespeare's a compulsory part of the curriculum, so we don't have to justify it. We absolutely have to understand what is the place and value of Shakespeare's work in the lives of young people and in a 21st century contemporary curriculum. And the thing that I am really heartened by is, because I don't want the RSC necessarily to answer that question, I want to hear what young people say about the answer to that question, and I want to hear what teachers say about the answer to that question. So part of our research over the past 10 to 15 years has been, what do young people say? And I'd love to share, you know, that when young people have the explore Shakespeare's plays as a play text, not as a book, when they explore it as a play text, this is what they say to us about it. So I've just got sort of four or five quotes, but they're so powerful, I'd love to share them. So young people say, I think Shakespeare's lessons are about what you think rather than what you are told to think. Another young person said, with Shakespeare, you get to see the world from other people's points of view. Another young person said, Shakespeare is a way of expressing humanity's culture throughout the years and how it's developed and changed. It expresses how we were, where we are now, and where the future is going. And finally, a young person who said, it, brackets, learning about Shakespeare, probably one of the best experiences I've ever had. Now, that those statements, they're made by, you know, young people in schools where the thing that is different is the teaching is drama-led, is theatre-based. Now, you compare that with typically the responses we might hear from a student is, I cried when I found out I had to study Shakespeare. And I do think there is, it wouldn't be an overstatement to say, I think there is a crisis in the experience that young people get of Shakespeare, and therefore whether they feel it is something they can take ownership of and that speaks to them of them, or whether it's something they feel excluded from. And when we did a big strategy consultation at the RSC early last year, where we talked with teachers and with young people about what did they think it was important for the RSC to do? What did they want to see us do? And actually the thing that concerned me coming through that consultation was, it was about the status of Shakespeare in education. That's what teachers were really worried about. That's what young people were really worried about. The young people who'd had the positive experience, who'd had the theatre-based experience of Shakespeare's work, and the teachers who'd seen that work happen, and the difference it made to their children as learners. They were really worried about the fact that they are the exception, not the rule. The thing that I found when I came to the RSC, I'd been an actor and I'd been an educator, and then I started to just sort of go into rehearsals at the RSC, and I felt, oh my gosh, it's like being back in a school. Because on the first day of rehearsals, I'd get, you know, there'd be a group of actors who'd all have quite different, you know, it's very mixed ability. You'd have some actors that were very confident and lots of actors who weren't. But by the end of that rehearsal period, that group of actors, my goodness, you know, they could hold their own with any world leading academic about that play. Like, literally, and I was so fascinated by that. So, and the reason that they've been able to do that is because it's an embodied, they've embodied the language. Now, we know that as drama practitioners, that it's about an embodied form of learning, that learning doesn't happen with our head, it happens with our whole selves, and that's what we're doing when we're using drama pedagogies. So we talk a lot about rehearsal room pedagogy because it encapsulates this brilliant way of learning that is very familiar to drama practitioners and drama teachers. And I remember one actor saying to me that when I was sort of saying to them, what word would you use to sort of describe a rehearsal room? And she said, it's a place of possibilities. And I thought, oh my goodness, as an educator as well, I love that description because it's what I always felt I wanted the classrooms I was in to be, places of possibilities, that it is about exploring the choices, the options. So that's why, that's what we're doing when we're working with teachers, is simply equipping them with those ways of working that we've learned as a theatre company and that our directors have learned to use as a theatre company in order to unlock this complex text. But the key thing is we've got to all admit that it's really difficult. And of course, we're not going to understand it, but let's ask the students to go on a journey with us and then critically test, what do we think now? Now that we've played with it, now that we've explored it, now that we've been interpreting it, now what do we think is the meaning of doing this work? When we set students that task, 9 times out of 10, they will always say, actually, we've found something about ourselves, we found something about each other, we found something about the world we live in, which is always the kind of test of any great work of art, isn't it? Have you actually been able to make a personal connection with it? And they do, in my experience.
Yeah, I would agree. I used to teach year 8 Hamlet, because one of the reasons that they got on with it very well was because there was a certain element that they recognized him. They knew who he was. They were like, for some of them, he was exactly like them. Yeah. You know, the whole concept of a broken home and not understanding why it is that your mother is now with somebody new was very familiar to some of these young people.
One thing to add into that is, again, when we ask young people about what they value about Shakespeare's work and what they value about this way of working on Shakespeare's work, what they say is the fact that the learning is open-ended, the fact that there's no right and wrong answer, is one of the key important differences about learning in this way that they place enormous value on, because it's where they have, it's because they have to develop and support their own views and opinions. So we did a piece of research which involved about 5,500 young people all across the country. And we were asking them very open questions about the value of art subjects generally and Shakespeare lessons, when those Shakespeare lessons were very, you know, theatre-based and rehearsal room-based. And what they told us was that those were the lessons where they developed a greater sense of their own identity, their own agency, self-belief, confidence, communication skills, empathy, and appreciation of difference and diversity. So one of the things that was very clear from across those 5,500 responses was that they understood that because they were exploring interpretive choices, they were beginning to appreciate difference of opinion. And they understood that that was a really key skill for them, because they hadn't, that literally it was eye-opening for them that, oh my gosh, I think this about this line or about this character or about this scene, but actually somebody else thinks something different and they can back it up. It goes back to, for me, the point I made earlier about the purpose of education. we're looking at a deeply complex set of transferable skills that young people need in the workplace when they leave school. They need them in school, but then in life, but they also need them for work. And we need to really be better at articulating the value of the skills that we are developing through the drama, through drama pedagogies, through Shakespeare's work, through rehearsal room pedagogy. We've got so much research as an arts sector, as an education sector, about the kinds of skills that these subjects and these ways of working develop and how they really support life and work skills.
The message that we spend a lot of our time trying to get across, and it's kind of this time of year when we're having discussions with parents and students about whether or not they're going to take GCSE drama next year and considering moving on into the sixth form and all of those kind of things, is you end up having these conversations about why it's valuable. What's your next big challenge? What's the next thing that, you said you joined the RSC 15 years ago and you've done all these things, and we're now looking at the representation elements through bringing in the Empress. What's the next thing? What's the next thing on your list?
Well, one big thing is we are developing a new Shakespeare curriculum. For all of the reasons that we've just talked about, we're doing a big series of consultations with young people and with teachers and with artists about how Shakespeare's work in the curriculum can speak more directly to the themes and issues and questions that young people have about the world they're living in, and how it can feel like the curriculum, the Shakespeare curriculum, is relevant to their lives. So that will be launched in the spring of 24. So if you want to find out more about that, please do get in touch. We're also expanding the partnership clusters that we have. I said we have 25 clusters of partnerships. We're expanding that to 35 clusters over the next 3 years. And alongside that, we're doing something that I'm very interested in, but slightly scared of, is looking at what are the different ways of measuring the impact of arts learning interventions, theatre-based interventions, on learning outcomes for children, and also including academic self-concept. So I know that this, it might feel like a tired question, but I think there is so much evidence that has been developed internationally, particularly in the US, that shows very significant differences for young people from low-income backgrounds who are in what we would describe as arts-rich schools, and the difference that makes to the outcomes of those young people post-school. And we don't have the same research portfolio in the UK. So we also don't have the right or a set of measurement tools that we can use that properly values the sorts of difference that arts learning interventions can make. So what we are currently doing is developing some of those measures and tools so that we can pilot them with schools in 23, 24 and 24, 25. So those are some of the things that we're doing, as well as I think another big thing is about growing our youth voice. So another thing to please watch out for and listen out for is our youth advisory board are leading a young creatives convention on the 19th of July. It will be led solely by young people aged 9 to 21, but they want the audience to include adults as well as young people, but for adults to really listen to them about inclusion and access in the arts, and about what they want to see change at school level and in arts organisations. So 19th of July, put it in your diary. we hope to see lots and lots of teachers there who are already doing, you know, fabulous work with young people through youth councils and youth theatres.
That sounds like the most exciting package, and that's just the next 2 years. I'm astonished that you are still smiling and not lying on the floor exhausted, hoping that the nasty feeling will go away. Thank you very much. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I really enjoyed it, and I hope that anybody else is now going to rush away and go and sign up for your newsletters immediately.
Lovely to speak to you.
Huge thanks to Jackie O'Hanlon, MBE, from the RSC for giving up her time to talk to us. We hope you enjoyed this month's episode as much as we did. If you'd like to check out the content that Jackie referred to, head to rsc.org.uk/Shakespeare-learning-zone. And for the other elements that Jackie talked about, head to rsc.org.uk/learn/schools-and-teachers. And on that site, you'll be able to navigate through the teacher professional development, events and workshops for students, school broadcasts, teacher resources, the research into their work, the Associate Schools programme, the online performances and lessons, their homework help, and links to help you plan an education visit. Until next time.